Hello, and welcome to Beating Around the Bush with Fleur Anderson, a chance to sit back, relax, and chat about business, culture, community, and technology in rural Australia. Beating Around the Bush is brought to you by the Rural Business Collective, a network that exists to support, grow, and celebrate small businesses and entrepreneurs in rural, regional, and remote Australia.
Crystal Henry, it's so good to be here in the Love Henry HQ, Love Henry headquarters in Gundawindi. It's madness out there. There's busy, busy people packing boxes and stock flying everywhere. So thanks so much for taking 5 minutes out to chat with us.
Thank you so much for coming, and I'm so sorry it is a bit of a schmozzle today, but this does happen twice a year when we have 100 or 200 boxes turn up. This is how it is. I do apologise for that, but thank you for coming. Oh,
don't apologise. It's exciting. I'm trying to hold myself back. So, Crystal, I'd love to chat with you today about Love Henry. You've been on an extraordinary journey, and you've got big goals and things ahead of you as well. I'd love to start by just talking about where this love of fashion began. Where did this all start for you?
Basically, when I was a child, my mum was a seamstress. So she used to sew for us for church on Sunday. So beautiful little dresses and things like that. So she always had, patterns and scrap fabric just at our fingertips. So I would just go in and find a pattern and read the instructions on the pattern and work out how to put something together. And if I had a question, I'd just ask mum and say, hey, how do I do this? And basically, I just learnt myself because she would just give me a little bit of a guide, and that sort of started from there. And it's a funny story because my mum put my sister into a sewing class when she was really young, and I was so upset that I didn't get to go, but I don't think mum saw the future for me because my sister was the eldest. So, she just didn't have a passion for it. And then I just took over and I just kept every weekend I'd just make something new, whether it be a pencil case for school or a new little skirt or something for myself. And I just really started from there. So because it was available to me at a young age from my mum, and I think that's just where it started. So it was more the creative side that really probably influenced me, because I do have I was always really good at art and craft, and I was always just into doing something crafty. So, and sewing is a crafty thing to do. So that's just where I started. Yeah. So from a really, really quite a young age, you could see it sort of forming. And I can see it in my eldest, my 8-year-old. She's exactly like me.
Yeah.
She's a daydreamer. She'll find, like, just reading her report card, she's looks out the window and stares into space. But she's probably got this creativeness just happening, just, exactly like me. So, and she's forever just got her little art book and pencil case, and she's always drawing. So she's very much like myself.
There you go. So it's just being in the right environment growing up with your
mum. Definitely.
So it definitely came from that. This whole business started more from your love of creativity and sewing.
Yeah.
Living on a farm in Gundawindi, great childhood growing up where you could explore all those sorts of things. You went to school here in Gundawindi?
Yeah, but I was actually, I was born in Moree actually. Mm. So I lived at Garrah, so it's very regional. So we were quite a bit out of town at that young age, and then we moved from Garrah to Gunnedah when I was in grade one, and then I did most of my schooling in Gunnedah. And I actually, just thinking back, Gunnedah was really good. It had like a textile class and things like that, so I always took the creative subjects, and the school was really good for that. So I think even looking back then, I could see that that was something that I wanted to do. And then we moved to Gundawindi when I was in grade 11. So I did grade 11 and 12 here in Gundawindi. So, which our farm is about 45 minutes out of town. So
excellent. And so then after school, off to the Gold Coast to become a fashion designer.
Yeah.
And started designing wedding dresses, I believe. So then how did that eventuate, and how did you go from there to designing children's clothing in Gundawindi?
Yeah. So from Gundawindi here, I was working at Currys, which is the department store. So I used to do the windows, and I learned a lot about sales. So from Joe Hanna here in town. So I'm very fortunate enough that he pretty much took me under his wing and taught me a lot about fabrics and how the whole wholesale system works, which is where I'm at now, and ordering and things like that. So I did learn a lot of that retail side at a very young age. So that was when I finished school. And then I had people around town asking me to sew for them. So just like work uniforms and formal dresses and all these different things. So B&S skirts, like, so it just evolved because people were just forever asking me to do things. So then I thought no, and I actually started to study at the Bogabilla TAFE for a little bit because I knew that I didn't actually want to leave Gundawindi. Yep. I loved being here, so I never ever thought that I'd move to a city. It wasn't on my radar at all. So I thought, well, I'll try and learn at the local Bogabilla TAFE, where Prue Long was actually a teacher, and I only just saw her the other day, and she couldn't believe where I was at now from where I started at Bogabilla. But I do recall her telling me, you should be going to Brisbane and studying something. So that was when I decided to go to Brisbane and study. So I just studied a diploma of textiles, clothing and footwear in Mount Gravatt. And then at that stage, I was at the wedding stage of where my friends were all getting married. I was getting married. So I had people asking me to make wedding dresses and bridesmaid dresses. And it, like I say, it's just from word of mouth. People know that you do something once. You've got so many phone calls saying, right, I need this, I need that. I want you to do this for me. So it wasn't that I advertised that I was going to go in that direction. It just happened that way because of where I was in my life. Mm-hmm. Hence the reason going to children's wear that was my next stage. So it went from weddings to having children. Mm-hmm. So, and when I had my first daughter, Georgia, I was basically a stay-at-home mum and I just started sewing things for her. And then people were asking me, where did I get that? Where can I buy it? Mm-hmm. So then I decided to start sewing more and I went to the local markets at the Gold Coast every Sunday. And then people wanted more. And so I got a local sewing lady to help me. So, and then I just couldn't keep up. And I remember ringing an agent and saying, okay, I really want to make this big. How would you like to be an agent for me? And she said, could you do 100 sizes per style? And I said, no, I wouldn't be able to do that. And she said, well, until you can do that, I would love to take you on board. Your designs are amazing, but if you can't service the amount that I'm going to sell for you, I won't be able to use you as an agent. So that's where it formed from, the direction I knew I needed to go. So yeah, hence the reason I went offshore from then on, being pregnant with my second daughter, yeah, jumped on an aeroplane and went over. And that's pretty much how it all started. So
went to China.
Yeah.
So what was that experience like, trying to develop those relationships in a totally different cultural setting and everything,
and being pregnant?
Yeah.
I do pinch myself now. I'm so lucky. The manufacturer we have, we actually I had a school friend of mine working for me, Renee Hutchison, who's now Scavello, and she basically said, I'll come too. She was working with me part-time at that time. She said, I'll come too, yep, let's go. And we found it's really Australian. The Australian government is really good with trying to work with China, and at that time anyway. Mm. This was like 10 years ago. And in Melbourne, there was like a trade show where it was basically you could source international or offshore production. So there was all these different manufacturers on show showing their product, what they can make. And I found one that was similar to my product that I wanted. The workmanship was exactly what I wanted. So, and I just formed a really good relationship with them at the start. So then I thought, no, well, I can't just trust that, you know, they're really who I want by just this meeting. So I said, well, let's make a trip over there and go to their factory and see what their factory's like. And they were just so accommodating to us when we got over there. It was actually more of a tourist trip more than anything. They'd organised so many touristy things and we were just thinking, isn't this meant to be a business trip? But they went and showed us the factory and it was just so family run. That was exactly what I wanted. I didn't want it to be commercial. So I still have that same relationship with her. It's actually, she's about the same age as me and she speaks really good English,
yeah,
but her parents speak no English.
Yeah.
But just lovely people, yeah, to work with. So, and
because, yeah, that relationship's critical.
Oh, right? Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, and like I say, I just feel really lucky that we've found found them because we've been using them the entire time. So
yeah,
I don't want to venture to anyone else. I know I probably should have someone else as a backup, but it's just a bit, I feel like, you know, I want to be loyal to them because they've been really loyal to me from the very start, because our minimums were quite low from the very beginning.
That's often a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, and they've stuck with us, and now they're, you know, they're seeing the rewards of it now because our minimums are a lot higher than what they were when we started. But they had faith in us that we were going to grow. And at that time, I was telling her that I am going to grow. So, and I think that's, it's nice to have that belief then and know that direction that you are going to go from when you, from the very beginning, to know that this is only going to be a little, like, it's only going to be a smaller quantity now, but we're going to be in however many stores in 5 years' time. So you, you've got to have that direction from the very beginning of where you want your business to go. So, and I've always had that. So
That's great. So you're a bit of a goal orientated kind of person.
I am.
An intentional sort of goal setting kind
Not
of
really. It's just in my nature to dream big, because my dad has always said that. So I might tell dad an idea and he'll pretty much just say, nope, you can make it into this amazing thing and you can build it this big and that. So he's always just pretty much instilled that into me from the very beginning, just saying. And I think although he never knew how big it was going to get, I think from opening the store in Brisbane, he actually was like, wow. So I think he just thought that
she listened to me.
He actually...
So he must have been a great support for you in terms of, you know, because it's a big step taking those big leaps, you know, they take a bit of capital, they take a lot of bravery. So you've got to have some people in your corner. So your dad's in your corner. Have you had some other people that have been in your corner through the way?
I'm a bit of a loner as such. I don't really like to take direction from people. I like to do, I like to make my own mistakes, if that makes sense. So, I'm not really a person to ask for too much from other people. I feel like I'm annoying them if I ask people questions. Although, thinking back when I first started, I did actually give Dustin Boots a call. Just to say, oh, I'm going to China. Do you have some advice for me? So, and she was wonderful and so, like, helpful. I wasn't expecting someone else to give me that advice, and she just said, call me anytime. And admittedly, I haven't again, but just that first little thing was like, oh, how nice is it that you can call on people?
Yeah.
But I, like I said, I don't like to do it. I'm not even a, I've never been in a mother's group even. I just, I'm one of those people that just like to do my own thing. And I don't like to sort of look away from my own direction, because I feel like the more that you look around at what other people are doing, you can lose direction and focus of what you want to do. So if you want to be different to anyone else, there's no point looking around and seeing what everybody else is doing,
for sure,
because sometimes it can deter you from what you really want to do. So I find that I don't necessarily usually ask for advice from people, as much as I love it. I don't tend to ask for it. So but my dad, I'm always asking, even though we butt heads a lot of the time because we're probably so similar. He's probably my main go-to person
to if I needed advice.
And I think now, as the business has grown, like, always ask advice from professionals that you work around. So whether it be your accountant or your lawyer, or just always ask questions. Like, and that's what Dad has always said to me: always ask questions. Like, learn from people that are there to help you.
So they're sort of, you use your advisors or your other people that are in your support team, your team as such, you know, accountants, lawyers.
Definitely.
Like people in the government that you're doing Austrade and stuff like
that. Yeah.
I mean, it was a big decision moving back to Gundy, was it, at that point for the business? I mean, what were some of those hurdles you had to overcome growing a business here compared to the Gold Coast?
See, at the Gold Coast, we were actually, my husband and I were running my dad's mushroom farm, so we'd actually leased it off him. So we'd had two children there, and it was just at a point where it was time to come home. Like, with the kids, they were getting to an age, I just didn't see them going to school there. So it was just time for us, and we were really lucky at that time. My business could be moved anywhere. You know, we weren't a bricks and mortar, so it's like that was the joys of having the business that I did have. And that was the reason why I stayed as a wholesale business for so long, because it was easy. I could work my own hours. I could do my business from anywhere I wanted in the world, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I could work around my kids. So I've always been a stay-at-home mum, work like this whole business has been built in my home, with my kids around. Yeah. So I've struggled, but that's just how I've done it. Yeah, so it's basically moving back to Gundawindi was more of a choice, a family choice more than anything, more than a business decision.
Sure. As long as you had felt like you had good internet and...
Okay, so that's probably my biggest hurdle now you've said that. So internet has been my biggest cost involved, especially being out at the farm, where we only have Wi-Fi. There's none of this broadband where you can get
600.
Yeah, it's we're on 15 gigabyte or a month, isn't it?
Something
like gigabyte, that. Megabyte a month, and that doesn't get you very far.
No.
So
so that's a bit of a hurdle you've had to work around, but having a centre like Gundy close has made that a little bit easier.
Yeah, definitely.
And
so,
accessing your advisors, like things like accountants and lawyers and things like that, have you been able to, or things that you would normally access in the city, have you been able to?
Admittedly, I've still got accountants and things in the city.
Yeah.
I have recently found a local solicitor in town who I absolutely adore. So they've been amazing. And I think it would be easy enough to find even the local solicitor in accountant in town.
Yeah.
I have worked with one for a small amount of time and she was amazing as well.
Yeah.
It's just that working family farming was just easier to go with family accountant. Yeah. But in that respect, I definitely think you can find the facilities available in Gundawindi is amazing. As easy as finding, I actually find you've probably got a more personal service being in the town than what you do in the big cities. So
I'd agree with that. That's a good point.
Yeah, for sure.
Change of tack, but tell me about a little bit more about Love Henry, about the process from concept to the warehouse floor where we are today.
Yeah.
It's I'm imagining it's a pretty, there's a lot of steps in the supply chain.
There is.
So what sort of steps do you tell us about how it gets from your brain to the right out there?
So from my brain, it basically just comes out of my brain.
Because you design the fabrics as well, don't you?
So the way I like to design is from the print and the colours. So I'll find a certain print and a colour scheme that I want to go with. And I don't really know where I get inspired from. It might be a friend or someone might go, oh, you should do these colours. And I'll go, oh, yeah, I could do that. Or I might just see something somewhere and just be inspired from a certain whether it's an old piece of clothing or it could be anything really.
Yeah.
And then it just evolves from that. And then I with the process, at the moment I'm actually designing for summer 2017-18.
Okay. So you're working 12 months, more than 12 months out.
So basically I'm designing for that so that I can be ready to have samples at the trade show in February in Sydney.
Yep.
So I'll design a complete range, boys and girls and babies, and then get it photographed and catalogued, and then take it to the trade show. Then my stockers will then come to the trade show, place indent orders.
Mm-hmm. So indent orders, for people that aren't familiar, indent orders is where you're
pre-ordering for your store.
So at that trade fair in February, they're ordering for summer 17.
Correct.
18.
Yeah, and they're pretty much, well, they've got their summer in now, but they've got their summer in store and they're ordering for the next summer.
Mm-hmm.
So, because by the time I get that and then get it manufactured, so manufacturing time frame is about 4 months to actually get it manufactured, and then a month to get over here by sea.
And so is it all in one operation, the yarn manufacturing, the garment manufacturing, and the finishing touches all done in one?
So going to China, their cities are actually, so certain cities will specialize in certain things. So like Gundawindi, yeah, we're known for cotton growing. Yeah. So things like that. So in China, each city is known for whether it be yarn dyeing or the manufacture, or they've got knitting mills. They've got, so you've got to go to different cities for the each process. So so my manufacturer, so basically I'll send my manufacturer this, the design, she'll get those printed. So our fabrics will actually get made and then printed, and then it gets sent to her in the factory, and then they sell it up. And then we have these cardboard hangers, which they've got to put it on, then they've got to press them, and then they've got to put them in the bags, and then they've got to box them up, and they've got to send them over. So, and then there's a quality control in that as well. So they've got a quality control at all. Mm. And then, you know, in between all that, you've got to make sure your samples are fitted properly and, you know, your fitting's right. So it's, yeah, the process is very long.
And so then when it comes in here to Australia, then basically you're just like you are today, you're out there packing up for all your stockers and suppliers and shipping out to them, and then they're out there. So you've now, I mean, exciting that I see that you have a shop front in Chermside now.
Yep.
And soon to be North Lakes.
North Lakes. We're actually going to be at, it goes our store and then Kathmandu and then IKEA. So we're actually at the opening to IKEA, so you've got to walk past our shop to get into IKEA. And they've told me that there's 300 staff members building flat packs in IKEA right now. Could you imagine the swearing going on?
Alan Key heaven. So the shop fronts are a big, another, the next stage for Love Henry. Was that always in the plan? And why, tell me about the decision to go with a physical store in your own shop front instead of maintain expanding that wholesale sort of model.
So the wholesale model worked for me as a stay-at-home mum. And ideally, it wasn't something that I wanted to do yet. And I made the decision, I think it was last year, I said to my husband, no, I'm not going to open a store. I can't do it as, you know, a mum of kids. And next minute, we're opening a store. What happened is Westfield approached us and said, we've got a spot. So Westfield started doing pop-up shops where they actually had, so the ABC store went into receivership. So all ABC stores in every Westfield closed down. So basically they rang us and said, ABC's closed down. We've got a, we've got an actual store that you can go into. And it was 170 square meters, so it was really big. And at that time when I first saw it, I was like, oh no, it's way too big for me. But then I thought, no, let's just do it. The rent was great. It was worthwhile. Whether it be we broke even, it would mean that exposure in a major shopping center, it was more of a marketing campaign more than anything.
So was that as a pop-up style store or is it permanent?
It's actually a pop-up. It's, they call it pop-up because it's a short-term lease. So they basically, they give you the opportunity to go. It's actually a massive store and it's already built out exactly the way. So pretty much ABC just packed up their stock and left. They left all the fittings. Everything was in there. So we pretty much just had to take our clothes in there. So there was no real cost involved. So it was like, okay, let's do it. And it was open for, this was in Garden City for 5 weeks and it went amazingly well. So we're like, oh, we've got to, like, this is probably a direction we need to take. So that kind of got us in that direction and that, and thinking in that way. And we had the stock there. So we were like, it's a way of moving stock and getting exposure in major shopping centers. That was sort of the reason why we did it. And then another opportunity came up where Westfield said, hey, we've got, we're opening this brand new complex area of the new North Lakes, and North Lakes is a growing family orientated place. So, and then it, they said it's right next to IKEA, and we were like, okay, we have to do it. So, and they basically gave us an opportunity that we couldn't pretty much turn down, where, you know, they're putting in a lot of money towards it. So because it was too sort of risky for us, we were like, no, we don't think we want to pay a full fit out. But then with their help, they're actually guiding us along the way. So, you know, they're paying from anything from the actual design process, like getting a designer on board. And it's they're just showing us how to do it. So it's like, for us, it's a no-brainer. We're thinking, why not take this opportunity?
And you're probably going to get that being a new centre more so than going into an existing centre, probably?
Yeah,
because they're trying to encourage
everything
to go great.
Yeah.
Go off well in there.
Exactly, So,
and how did they come across you when with that opportunity at Chermside? Was that something that you guys had expressed interest, curious, like, you know, made an inquiry before?
I had made an inquiry a couple of years ago, like just randomly, and someone got back to me, but I never got back to them because I decided, no, not going to do it. Not going to worry about it. And then apparently the guy from Westfield who contacted me, he said someone that worked in Westfield said to contact us.
Yeah.
So she'd seen the brand and loved the brand and said, you should see whether they're interested.
Yeah.
And on the off chance that we actually were. So we were like, okay, let's give it a go.
Yeah.
So it was all a bit of a, like, pretty much it went from them calling saying we've got a space to us saying, yeah, well, we're interested, to us seeing it to being open next week, the week after.
Yeah, like, amazing.
So, but it was all a bit of a whirlwind. We just went, let's just do it. And and the girls worked frantically here, you know, packing up boxes to send there. And, and so, like, if it was just me, I wouldn't be able to do it. But we did, and my husband came and helped. So we just basically worked setting up the shop for a couple of days straight. And, you know, we were there until 3 o'clock in the morning, but we got there.
Yeah.
But it's like I say, I think when opportunities come for you, you've just got to take them and just like, there's no point thinking, oh no, I'm not going to do that yet. I'll do that in a few years' time. You might not get the opportunity in a few years' time. Yeah. So you've just got to roll with it when it's
take a leap.
Yeah, and it's like a football player. They have to, you know, work hard while they're young and fit.
Yeah.
Because they can't do it in a few years' time. Like, they might not get that opportunity. So you've got to do it now when it's hot and, you know, like, people are talking about it and it's on people's radar.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, excellent. So you've really taken an opportunistic sort of attitude towards your business and just to leap.
Yeah.
I heard someone describe to me one time that, and I certainly felt like that at times, that small business is like throwing yourself off a cliff and building the plane on your way down.
That's exactly right. That is so true. It is, because that's how it does work. Because if you don't take that leap to start with, you won't move forward. You're not going to get anywhere. And, like, you know, and if you're not constantly trying to build your brand or your business, you'll just stay in the same spot. Like, you've got to just think forward, just go, yep, okay, and just hope that things will come your way eventually.
Yeah.
Like, this hasn't all happened overnight. Like, I started, I think I went to my first trade show in 2010. So, you know, the process has been long, and that's with kids around as well. So, and I think with me, because I'm thinking so far ahead of time, I kind of know that my business is still going to be there in a year's time, because I'm designing for that year already. Yeah. Like, I'm actually already forward thinking.
Yes.
Although this whole process with the new shops and things, that's all new to me. And I think there's going to be hurdles, I know, but, like, if I don't do it, I won't know. So, and that's the thing with business, is what's the worst that can happen? You can fail, yes, but you can always start again. There's nothing stopping you. You've got a whole lifetime to live, and why not do it? There's no reason why you can't. Like, nothing's going to happen. So,
you've
just got to do it.
Have a go at it. And is that something that you would probably say to people that are thinking about doing a similar thing? A lot of people I know use excuses such as young children or can't go that big just yet. I just need to wait a little bit longer just to have a go. Is that would be
I think so. And I think it's the same when people say, oh, you'll never have enough money to have a child. Like, so, you know, when people say, oh, no, oh, we're not really financially stable enough to have a child yet.
Yeah.
But I think if you say that, you'll never be financially stable enough to have a child. You just got to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
When your time's right, when you want to do it, do it. Like, don't worry about what's involved. Don't overthink things. Just do it. And, like, yes, you do need to plan.
Yeah.
That's always a good thing. And have some form of a budget and a plan in place.
Mm.
But, and have your worst case scenarios. What's the worst thing that can happen? And if it's not that bad that you lose maybe a little bit of money, then
everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's still going to be fine. Like, yeah. you probably spend more money going on an overseas trip than what you would losing money in a business.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to just sort of think of those sort of,
And what's, I mean, to keep going in that and to have that, you know, always putting one foot forward in front of the other and keeping, being able to be agile and opportunistic, you must have to build some support around yourself. I mean, when did you take on your first sort of employees or what sort of things do you do to keep sane?
Keep sane. Wine?
Yes.
No, but staff-wise, I've been really lucky as well. Who I've had some amazing staff along the way. And I think at the very start, so we, when I first started and I did take on my friend that I went to school with, Renee, who was the one that came to China with me, we had a mushroom farm. So, and it was making good money. So basically we were using the mushroom farm money to support having that extra staff member. So, and even with me still working those long hours, I just, we were still making our own money through both our businesses because I was still doing the bookwork for the mushroom farm. So I was still doing that business on the side without getting a wage. So I was thinking, well, I'm going to get someone to help me do what I want to do instead of me getting paid. So it's a matter of just utilizing our income and what we could afford at that time and how, and still the business was making enough money to pay for my employee, but not necessarily making money as such. Yes. So, but it was building that brand and I was putting it all back
into
the business. So there was nothing I was taking out. It was all just straight back in, back in every single season. It was like, just come on, we'll get there. But, and then just as I started growing, then that's probably my biggest thing is I never really got a lot of staff. It was always just me and maybe someone else helping. But, and I found it really hard to even get outside help. A lot of the things I would just learn how to do myself or just, you know, work those long hours and just get it done. You know, back in, when we first started, like I did all the photography, the catalogs, like everything myself. So every little aspect of the business was I did. And even like the book work, I rarely even got anyone else in. So, and I think that's really important is like just to save that money there. You can do it. I'm not an accountant. I'm not a bookkeeper. I'm not a graphic designer. I'm not all these things, but I just made do it like because I just needed to. I just did it because I didn't want to pay anyone. And then I've slowly started to find that the new staff members and things like that. So my biggest sort of leap was putting sort of I've got Cheryl Lee on. So she was my main girl that she was has been amazing. As with putting Amy on as well as a more to see the bigger picture of things. So Cheryl Lee's amazing at running the day to day. So I rarely even come in here, you know, I'm really even focused on the wholesale side of things now. I'll still see what's going on, but I'm focused on the bigger picture of where we can build this. And, you know, so they're holding the fort with the day to day running of Love Henry now. And I'm sort of looking forward of what's happening in the future of Love Henry. So, and that's why I've got Amy on board to help me with that because I'm not an organized person. Yeah. So basically she's organized this interview with you. And basically rang me yesterday saying, hey, you're right for tomorrow. And I'm like, yep, sure.
I'll be looking around in the areas that you know your understand your strengths and weaknesses.
Oh, definitely.
Your strengths and manage your weaknesses.
Yeah, and having the people in those areas. Yeah. So, you know, I don't need another person in my business like me because I'm all over the shop and I don't need that. I need people with structure you know, like, and that, and it works. You need to have that in business. You need to have all those different personalities to make it work because I think being myself like that, it's just the creative side probably coming out of me and it's just how I work. I don't like, you know, I got to where I was being that way, so I can't change now. But I have been very fortunate to have amazing staff over the time that I've actually started to now. So,
That's great. Look, Crystal, it's been such a pleasure talking with you, and I really love your story, and I think that it's a great example of not letting where you live provide any limitations to what you want to achieve. I think there's so much ahead, and
I want to wrap this interview up so I can get out on the shop floor and have a bit of a sticky bag and have a look for myself. But thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
No, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Beating Around the Bush. If you've enjoyed the show, please head to iTunes to subscribe and leave a review. For more, visit the Rural Business Collective website at ruralbusinesscollective.com.au and join the growing tribe of small business owners and entrepreneurs making a difference in the bush.